right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with SpongeBob SquarePants. Cliffy D. could be something else.
I'm afraid to ask what else it could be.
I don't know. I was trying to think of something. The only reason why I'm making fun about this to Cliff this week is because he, I don't know. Was it a sponge? Was it like a house leaking, mosaic was just wet.
Very, very, very wet, I must say. It seems almost kind of appropriate that my first and only time at, well, I guess we can now call it Old Mosaic Stadium.
You know, the people are getting around. Let's just call it Taylor Field. It's Mosaic Stadium at Taylor Field.
Well, that's the official name. Officially, that is what you would call where the Saskatchewan Roughriders currently play.
Right.
And the new stadium that will be unveiled to the rest of the league next year is new Mosaic Stadium, but will eventually be Mosaic Stadium again. So it's right. There's a lot of moving parts here, it seems.
But we'll talk about Cliff's adventure out west. I tweeted to you. It's like, nothing like going west to go east. You went Calgary to go to Saskatchewan or to Regina, is that right?
I certainly did. It was
stupid Canadian flying.
Oh, it was quite the itinerary. Now, I understand that Regina isn't, for some people, considered a destination, and it certainly isn't considered that for the fine folks at WestJet, who I flew out to first Calgary, then Regina to. So it's kind of funny, like when you look down at the plane, like down out of the plane, and you're like flying over the place that you will eventually go to.
I know. As like, I said to you, didn't they? Like, wasn't there a bell on your? Wasn't there a bell on your seat where you could just ring it? You know, like for a bus, so you could be let out of the next major city.
Like, right,
you
or
know, they could just open up the door. You know, the
just you parachute know, me out of there, man.
The mask would have come down. You know, so everybody could breathe while you were leaving, and they could just give you a parachute, either that or a bag of rocks. But you know, you would have gotten down faster that way.
Oh my goodness!
I was like. Why was I not surprised? As I said, stupid Canadian Airlines. But, and I think the reason why we're a little bit more jovial this week is we got to win.
We sure did.
And it's a matter of, I mean, is it? Do we look at the win itself? Do we look at, Vernon Adams Jr.? Do we? By the way, what did you think of that pink in his hair?
It's definitely original, given that.
I thought it was pretty cool. Obviously, you couldn't see it with his helmet on, but
when he was doing his interviews and everything like that, and I mean, I definitely give him full props for embracing the whole CFL pink thing, because the players were wearing their gear and were also giving it away after the game as well, which was a really nice gesture as well.
So nice.
For Vernon Adams to be able to do that, just to show the support, I think it definitely speaks to his character as well.
Was he giving out locks of hair?
Hey, that could work, maybe. I mean, anyone should be giving out locks of hair, though, Bear Woods.
Those amazing
threads.
Yes. So you would go from Pink October to Shave to Save. Isn't Shave to Save November?
That's correct.
It would have been perfect. You know, just shave the head and... You know, it's like with Bear Woods, which we have to get him on this show, you would think it's sort of like it's his Samson thing. You don't want to cut off his dreads, man.
Well, and I often think, too, about Jonathan Crompton. Remember when he first came in 2014?
Hercules. Yeah.
He really was. And then all of a sudden he cut off his hair. Again, it was all for – it was being grown in for charity as well, and a very noble cause. But at the same time – he cuts off his hair and boom, gets injured and pretty much done like dinner for the most part. I mean, it really was a Samson and Delilah kind of scenario with that.
So we had Hercules and Samson on the team. We have a couple of Angry Birds. They're calling Nick Lewis now the train, at least in stadium, in our stadium. I don't know where that came from.
I don't either, because, I mean, the guy's got like 10,000 nicknames, and the train is certainly not one of them.
Yeah, so I think that may have been Jacques Moreau trying to be very funny.
Try harder, Jacques.
Yeah. So let's talk about the win. Let's talk about what we think about how it was. And it's funny, a lot of the pictures that I saw in the newspaper after the game was of Vernon Adams Jr. But it's funny, it's one of those pictures that made him look like a deer in the headlights, that type of thing. But he was far from the truth. You know, his stats weren't the best, so it's not really, you really can't gauge how he did during the game. And you know, the weather conditions really did not, you know, they really, as you'll attest to, for you to actually tweet out and say, sorry, cannot tweet out during the game, it's raining too much.
It really was. I mean, it just did not stop. Like, as soon as you got to the stadium, throughout the entire game and afterwards, I mean, it just kept coming down. Like, I mean, I'm a pretty hardy soul. Like, I mean, you'd have to try to play the game in a hurricane for me not to show up. But I mean, like, I've sat through all kinds of weather at football games, and this was just unbelievable. Like, it just kept pouring and pouring. I'm like, wow, this sucks.
Which I was able to see. You were able to do your Periscope with the guys from over at Piffle's Pod, and that stadium was leaking. When was that done? Was that before the game or at halftime?
I did that at halftime, actually.
At halftime? Okay.
Yeah, just because I figured, okay, we wanted to do it beforehand. I mean, like, a lot of our plans really kind of got pushed to the wayside because of the weather more than anything else. Because, I mean, we did a little bit of tailgating with those fellas and gal, and it was just absolutely awesome. Like, we had a blast hanging out and just being part, you know, just really talking about the whole CFL podcast family. Like, I mean, it was just really great. Like, it's one thing to sit and give each other shout outs on our respective podcasts, and that's all well and good, and, you know, have each other on for interviews and whatnot. So, I mean, that's all great stuff, but I mean, to actually be live,
right,
and participate with these guys in a little bit of tailgating was just absolutely awesome. And I thought, okay, well, we definitely got to do something, like, whether it's Facebook Live or Periscope. But it just, like I said, unfortunately didn't quite work out the way I think we had planned in our heads, but I figured, okay, we're gonna make the most of it no matter what. And like I said, I figured at halftime, all right, the guys are gonna come over, we'll, you know, sit and shoot the breeze a little bit, throw it all up on Periscope, and you know, make the best of a bad situation. But yeah, I mean, like, if you folks were able to see that, it was the leaking all over the place is unbelievable. And
yeah,
I actually got warned about it. Like, Alex and Fernie, those guys were just like, yeah, it's bad, you'll see it leaking. And sure enough, as soon as we walked into the stadium, like, wow. Like, I mean, and not just little dribbles here and there, I'm like straight up leaking. Like, and just not stopping.
It's like a bad board game where it just leaks and leaks. We're getting off topic here. Well, we're talking about the rain because of, but I mean, Vernon Adams himself, I mean, that's funny. The official game day conditions, by the way, according to the league, said wet. The field was wet and artificial. The weather was heavy rain. They actually said 30,000. They actually counted the tickets that weighed 30,000. No.
I can tell you right now, and I'll give props to those that stayed and weathered the storm, so to speak. But yeah, there was definitely not 30,000 people there. I mean, I could still, for the most part, hear myself think. To their credit, they were pretty loud. I mean, I would give it a rough estimate of about, say, 19,000, maybe 20,000. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and like I said, they were loud when they had to be, and you could definitely hear them. But no, there definitely wasn't 30,000 people in attendance on this past Saturday.
So Vernon Adams Jr. was 11 of 24. You know, that's nothing too spectacular. Only 177 yards. Interception and a touchdown. The interception, if I remember correctly, it was kind of telegraphed, right? But what it really doesn't show is, it shows the really the rushing stats itself. Two rushes for 26 yards. That's cool. But it was his ability. It's something that the other quarterbacks recently, that he really reminded me of what A.D. Mack was able to do as a quarterback when he was behind and when he was under center. He was just able to get himself out of situations, put himself into good situations where he was able to complete a pass.
Yeah. In fact, I even made the analogy that he reminded me of another quarterback who was under 6 feet tall and just happens to wear the number 3. again, if I have to spell it out for everybody, it'd be Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks, because he has that same maddening ability to just escape trouble. And just when you think that he's done and he's about to get sacked, he manages to wiggle himself free and just launch the ball. And again, Vernon Adams didn't complete a whole lot of passes, but the ones that he did complete were just enough needed to move the chains, or at least get, you know, some sort of positive momentum forward, which was sorely needed. I mean, like, he didn't if he was panicked or had fear in his eyes, it wasn't for very long, but it just seemed like the moment wasn't too big for him for the most part. I mean, he didn't get a whole lot of help from his offensive line, all things considered, considering he was sacked 6 times. But at the same time, despite those sacks, despite of everything that you saw, I mean, the overall product, I mean, there's something there. I'm not ready to anoint him as the next great Alouettes quarterback, certainly not after one game, but...
Well, it's like Chatelaine. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do that.
No, you really can't. But from what I did see, like, okay, you get the sense that, okay, there just might be something here after all. So it's worth exploring. Let's see what else he can do. I mean, at this point, like we said, it was a foregone conclusion that Montreal was probably not going to make the playoffs, and unfortunately that got made official as a result of Hamilton's overtime win in Ottawa last Friday. So by the time the game started in Saskatchewan, both teams were eliminated, both had nothing to lose, so I think that was sort of the mentality going into it. It's like, you know what, the hell with it, just throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. And I think that's really what it was with Vernon Adams and Jacques Chaplin. That's probably how they attacked things. That was probably their game plan, was just to go ahead and just let loose. Let's see what we can do. And for the most part, I'd say it worked pretty well for Montreal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny. You have games that where the weather is perfect and they can't score for crap, and we've been like this all year where we think they're playing like garbage, but when you throw weather into the thing, it seems to be a little bit different. You know, everybody seemed to be having issues. Even Darian Durant still had a great game.
Oh man, I tell you that, like, you talk about like veteran quarterbacks and just that wily, you know, just find a way to win attitude, and that's what Darian Durant is all day long. I mean, I used to laugh, like, people used to give him grief over and over again because he wasn't who they thought he should be, and it always made me laugh. Like, you guys are not going to appreciate this guy till long after he's gone. Mm-hmm. But to his credit, he's stuck around. He's been through hell and back with his injury back in 2015, and just coming back this year and playing the way he has. I mean, despite being on a less than great Riders team, I mean, Darian Durant is still one of those guys that you just know, like, he wants to win and he'll do everything possible to win. And you saw a lot of that this past Saturday. Like, the first 3 quarters were just dreadful at best for Saskatchewan, but I think you almost got the impression, like, that fourth quarter rolled around and Darian Durant was like, you know what? Nah, we're not going down without a fight. Like, he just took it upon himself. He put the team on his back. And like I said, he nearly willed them to victory. I mean, he took on that mindset of, if you got to do something right, if you want to do something right, you got to do it yourself. And that's what led to Saskatchewan's sole touchdown, was Darian Durant just marching the ball down the field and eventually scoring himself. So, like I said, the guy is definitely a gamer 100%. Never mind his age, never mind any of those things. I mean, this is the guy that you would want to have leading your team for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, with obviously this being the first game with all the major changes that the Alouettes made, you know, previously in the week, we had some standouts. We really did. You know, B.J. Cunningham was targeted. Our two newcomers, Marcus Henry and Dequan Underwood, got into the mix too. You know, it's obviously it's a brand new day type of thing, but it's overall, I think it started off okay. It'll be very interesting to see what happens this coming week versus the record setter and record setting Calgary Stampeders, but we'll talk about that a little bit later too. But I mean, we got a win when we needed the win. You know, Cliff, it's hard to believe. I mean, with all the winning that the Alouettes have done over these years, this is actually the first time that the Alouettes have swept a season series from a Western Division opponent since 2013. Now, mind you, okay, it's only a few years, right? I mean, that was Edmonton where we swept that season series. But considering how dominant the West has been this year, it was a win that the Owls needed. I mean, considering how it went last year, the last game of the year last year versus Saskatchewan, you know, Brandon Bridge starting, et cetera, us losing in overtime where it was a nothing game. Getting a series win, I think, is a huge starting point considering the turmoil that this team has gone through this year.
No, there's no question about that. I mean, a win will definitely boost your morale no matter what. And just have that fact of being able to have a season series win, considering all that we've gone through this year, is pretty remarkable. And yeah, it's easy to say, well, it was against Saskatchewan and they were just a mostly terrible team this year. And by and large, that's true. I mean, they did not have the good fortune, despite completely overhauling their coaching staff and bringing in quite a few new players and that. Things didn't quite go Saskatchewan's way, and you know, it's unfortunate for them, but I definitely see a good foundation there. I definitely see, like, the past couple of games, like, Saskatchewan has just found a way to just persevere and win, and that's what you got to do in this league. You just got to find a way to play four quarters and just play the best football possible, and by and large, Saskatchewan's done that, and they nearly came back against Montreal. That's the other thing, too, is that this is not a terrible football team. They've just been in terrible situations more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I really think that Chris Jones has laid down a foundation for this football team. And I'd say give it another year or two. I think they're really going to surprise a lot of people. And again, they've all got all kinds of great momentum going right now. I mean, if they can finish the season strong, they'll be starting next year playing in a brand new stadium. I mean, and let me tell you, we'll talk about this later, but I mean, this is a stadium that is just going to be an absolute football experience, not just for Rider Nation, but for anybody that's going to come and watch a football game there. Be prepared to be wowed. That's all I have to say right now.
Now, obviously, with how poor the scoring was and how low it was, if you've gone back through the past couple of episodes, you'll notice that we talk about usually a team, and it's funny. They mentioned it also. They taped it early this week on the Two and Out CFL podcast this week. They talk about it. If you don't score in the first half, you're not going to win. That's true. And that can't be even anywhere farther than the truth in the Alouettes this year. This game this week, Cliff, was the Owls, was their ninth game this year where they scored less than 10 points in the first half. Less than 10. And they had lost all of them. The win this week versus Saskatchewan, where they scored less than 10 points, snapped a streak of 13 straight losses of scoring, not winning after scoring less than 10 points in the first half.
Oh, and again, this is the situation we're in right now. I mean, like, this is a pair of very young teams overall. I mean, yeah, Darren Durant has been playing for several years, but I mean, overall, the teams themselves are fairly young, and they're still learning how to be football players for the most part. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're not necessarily going to see the offensive prowess that you would have seen in years gone by when it was Darian Durant versus Anthony Calvillo, for example. But like I said, I'd still say a good foundation in Saskatchewan. And despite everything that's gone on in Montreal, I mean, it's so hard for me to say that this is truly a bad team. I just think there's a lot of areas that need major, major improvement.
Oh, no, the teams of the 80s were a lot worse than what this current Owls team is. A lot worse, you know, right before they folded.
Oh, there you go. So, I think as fans in the past 20 years, since this team has come back, I'd say we've been spoiled for the most part. Like, we're just not used to losing.
Well, yeah,
like, this is not something that we're accustomed to at all. And, I mean, Saskatchewan, they've kind of, for years, had been painted as the lovable losers, kind of like the Chicago Cubs or any of these other teams. But within the past couple of years, they've managed to get their act together and put together some wins and even win a Grey Cup championship or two. So for them to sort of fall, you know, take a couple steps back a little bit has been a little rough for them as well. Well, a rough ride, if you will.
Right. Ah, I see what you did there. It was the Alouettes' first win since August 20th of 2015. Actually, Cato was a starter, and it was versus BC. What is also funny, too, because we're talking about – and I'm trying to remember where I heard this because I was going to mention it to you and email it to you, and I completely slipped my mind. It was the Steelers game this past week versus New England. And they themselves, you know, their lead broadcast group for CBS, They even said themselves, because of the situation, because Pittsburgh is, you know, Ben Roethlisberger being hurt, and he's out for the next 4 to 6 or whatever it's supposed to be. They even said, they go, you need – they were talking specifically on how Pittsburgh's backup quarterback is – basically how he was getting reps. He has – over the past 2 years, he'd received 156 – was 156 reps, I think, in last year's preseason. This year he had 56 reps, 56 passing attempts in this year's preseason, and he got the bulk of them. And they basically said, you need to be able to have a starting a backup quarterback who is competent and knows what is going on. They need the reps, even though they do not play. And it kind of reminded me of what we went and what we talked about at the beginning of the preseason this year, Cliff. And if you remember, both you and I, we're minds boggled because Kevin Glenn got the reps basically for 2.5 games.
Yeah, that's right.
Preseason, which made no sense, none whatsoever.
So, no, especially for a team that wasn't planning to keep him anyways, as it turns out. I mean, I had said previously that Kevin Glenn was not a long-term solution for Montreal, and I want to believe that Montreal themselves also agreed that he wasn't going to be a long-term solution. But with that in mind, why in God's name would you play him, like you said, nearly 2.5, give him like 2.5 games worth of playing time, and not do barely anything with your backup quarterbacks until like towards the end, essentially?
Right.
Like that's frustrating. Like, you know what you have with Kevin Glenn. You know what you're going to get after so many years playing in this league, whereas Rakeem Cato, Vernon Adams, Brandon Bridge at the time, and others, like, you don't know what you have with these guys, and they really didn't get a chance to show very much. I mean, Cato had a couple little flashes here and there, but I mean, still not enough. Like, I wouldn't say really truly enough to give him a sense that, okay, maybe one day he could lead this team. Like, it was just kind of like, okay, well, he did okay. He didn't do anything terrible more than anything else. Like, Adams, we barely saw anything, and what little he did do was just insignificant. And it was almost like, you start rolling your eyes because you think this guy's terrible.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. And with everything that has occurred, and, you know, Jim Popp stepping down as head coach or whatever it was, and, you know, it makes you wonder, is there a change afoot coming? You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens next preseason. Now, to be fair, the NFL has 4 preseason games and some teams have 5 because they have the Hall of Fame game. We only have 2. Here's a serious question. When it comes to, so that you can make sure that you have a legitimate and a competent backup quarterback, what would you think of adding a preseason game to the schedule?
I'm all for it. I've always thought there should be 3 games, 3 preseason games, both in the CFL and in the NFL. I think 4 games is way too many in the NFL, and I don't think 2 games is nearly enough in the CFL. I would say 3 games per league would be more than enough, and I honestly wouldn't even have the starter, like your veterans or perceived starters, playing the first game whatsoever.
Well, that's what that's exactly what I said. That's what Pittsburgh did, and that's why Landry Jones, by the way, another number 3, by the way.
Something about that number 3.
that's why he did what he did. I mean, it was okay, but anyways, that's NFL. But still, they had it right. You need to have a competent starting quarterback. What's going to happen with Vernon Adams? We're talking about, speaking of starting quarterbacks for the Alouettes. You know, the league made the, they had showed the stat this week that Vernon Adams was the 10th quarterback to start for the Alouettes since AC retired. I think that was the stat.
11th, I believe.
It was the 11th, so he became the 11th. So there were 10 prior to that,
mm-hmm.
which is nutballs in itself.
Yeah,
I think it just goes to show again what we were just talking about. First time starters in the CFL for the Owls have been very interesting, and so Adams Jr. becomes the eighth quarterback to get his first CFL start for the Owls. You know, Adams gets his win. Brandon Bridge last year got a loss. Cato got a win. Marsh got a win. Crompton got a win. Troy freaking Smith got a win. Nieswander got a win, but that there's a huge asterisk by that one. If anybody remembers the last second win versus BC in the rain, a couple, was it
2013?
Yeah, 2013. That's why the asterisk is by that, because he didn't finish that game. It was Tanner Marsh.
Yeah, which again goes to prove what many of our fellow podcasters have long surmised, is that QB wins is probably one of the worst stats and most misleading stats there is in football.
Is there a certain thing in hockey that when you get a win and when you get a loss for a starting goaler?
No.
So if Carey Price comes in for 5 minutes, the first 5 minutes, and then is pulled for whatever reason, whether it be hurt, too many goals, whatever, and whoever comes in as their backup and they play the rest of the game, who gets the win or who would get the loss? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like pitching in baseball. And that's not a very good analogy.
No, it's not, because, yeah, how many times have we seen a pitcher go in, like, play absolutely lights out, like pitching six shutout innings practically?
Yeah, six. Gets
taken out just to protect his arm, and then middle reliever or even the closer blows it, and then it's...
Well, that's also the weird thing too, is that no matter what's in there, for you know, the catcher, if the reliever comes in, pitches three innings, he automatically gets a save. Why are we talking about baseball? Besides me looking at the game one while we're taping the show right here, game one of the World Series. So it you know, they can get the wins, but it's a matter of what they do next. A lot of these guys were considered, if you look at these, how many guys were actually long-time starters? Two, three. Cato, Crompton, and Troy Smith, if you can call them quote-unquote long-term. Where is Vernon Adams going to fall into this?
Well, and I guess that's going to be the question that starts – well, it has started right now and will continue more than likely throughout the end of the rest of the season, which only has two games left.
Yep. One thing I wanted to ask you before we hear about more of your adventure out to Regina, what was your opinion on that on the last play of the game, on that hit? It was to Joe McKnight, right?
Yep, Joe McKnight actually picked up a fumble, believe it or not. Oh,
great strip though. That was a great strip by
Bowman. John Bowman, just absolutely outstanding. And this is what you expect out of John Bowman too. Like, you could tell that Darian Durant was going to launch that ball and get it close enough to the end zone just to make something happen. I mean, you had 1 second left, you go for broke, and sure enough, Bowman comes in, strips Durant to the ball. You think, okay, game over right there. But then sure enough, Joe McKnight picks up the ball, has the presence of mind to just run, and he's off to the races. And yeah, I remember seeing the Venable hit live, and it was just one of those, cringe-worthy kind of moments, because you thought, okay, I thought it was just a good – hard shot that he just leveled McKnight with, but upon seeing it on review, I saw that he actually launched himself and led with his helmet to tackle him. I'm like, oh no, you cannot do that, buddy. I mean, I'm a fan of Winston Venable. I think his play is
in bounds, though.
In bounds, yes, but I mean, like, you're leading with your helmet. That's a no-no, and that's something that teams have stressed, and the league has stressed for the most part. So I will definitely not be surprised.
So far, there have been no fines. As of this taping, there are no fines yet.
Well, they usually hand those out on Thursday, so I got a feeling come Thursday, I'm pretty sure the league's going to level a hit of their own on Winston's wallet. I wouldn't be surprised. Let's put it that way. I mean, to call him dirty, I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I think he just kind of got a little bit ahead of himself, pardon the pun, and
dude, you got to stop.
I swear I'm not planning these out. I don't write these things out in advance, folks. They just come to me. But no, in all seriousness, though, I don't think Venable was being malicious. I don't think he had that intent in him. I think he just got a little bit a little jacked up, as they say, and just wanted to get McKnight pushed out of bounds and not towards the end zone. So
I think he wanted to make sure that he stayed out of bounds.
Yeah.
He's like, get up! One last thing. Was there anything more that we could take away from the game?
Well, I mean, no matter what, this offensive line needs to have a serious hole for Hall. I mean, Vernon Adams, it doesn't really matter who the quarterback is. I mean, you could put Bo Levi Mitchell back there, and he's still going to get sacked multiple times. It's just – it's really unfortunate. It's just – we talked about this also too at the start of the season, that it's going to take time for this offensive line to gel and really come together. But, I mean, it just hasn't happened at all. So I got a feeling we're going to see a major overhaul come the offseason. I think if – I don't know what – again, I still have a hard time believing that we're in such salary cap hell. If we are, I really hope we – if we aren't, I really hope we can find a way to get some other offensive linemen, because I'm all for giving rookies their chance to shine and letting them grow and develop as players. But a couple of these kids, my goodness, it's not good. I mean, you can't keep your quarterback vertical. You're not going to win football games. And just like, I mean, whether it was Kevin Glenn, Rakeem Cato, and yes, even Vernon Adams, all these guys ended up planted on the ground at some point or another throughout football games this season. And that's you're just not going to win football games like that. The fact that Montreal's won five of them despite that is almost miraculous when you think about it, really, because these quarterbacks have just been abused, like straight up abused. And again, I don't want to say necessarily anything disparaging, but I mean, at the same time, call it for what it is. I mean, this offensive line has just, it's not worked. And I personally wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of these guys not necessarily released, but maybe just sort of pushed to the background and have someone else come in to sort of get things right. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's just a matter of two, starter and legitimate backup. It's going to be an interesting offseason to see what's going to happen. We'll see what happens when Vernon Adams does start the final two games of the year. Next week will be a test, obviously, because it's versus Calgary, but one thing I noticed that my quick note is Boris Spede is playing half decent. He missed his first field goal, but in that weather, it's kind of excusable. But he's something got into him, and well, his time on the off the roster, and it's not the same type of situation as it was with Sean White last year, but. We'll see what happens, and we'll see if he continues for the next couple games. I got a feeling he is, because there's no way. I don't think there's any way that our other kicker is going to be coming back, because he looked like he really was hurt. But anyways.
Well, and credit to Beatty. I mean, whatever was going on inside of his head seems to have, for the most part, cleared up. Again, still not perfect, but again, let's not forget that this still is a very young man, and it's still going to take time for him to get back to that good spot again, I think. I mean, like I said, that rookie campaign of his was absolutely outstanding. The guy was just accurate. He was booming the ball downfield. I mean, he was just absolutely fantastic. And this year, unfortunately, things just kind of fell off the rails a little bit. I mean, these things happen. I mean, you talk about the sophomore jinx, and more often than not, that's real. And you definitely saw it with Boris Bede this year. So I'm really hoping that for his sake, these next two games, he can just kick the way that we know he can kick, and he can come back to training camp next year more focused and determined than ever.
Right.
But I also hope in that sense too, Montreal brings in another kicker, whether it's Anthony Farah or maybe two or three other guys, just keeping him honest. And I don't think it's necessary to try and mess with his head like they were doing with Sean White or anything like that. I think it's just a matter of, you know what, competition brings out the best in people. And I really think that a good kicking competition, a couple guys that might just be knocking on the door a little bit for him, I think that'll really bring out the best in Boris Bede. And I think we're definitely going to see him improve as he goes about with his career here in Montreal.
As you mentioned at the top of the show, that you were lucky enough to be able to head and go see your right now your first and only game at Mosaic Stadium at Taylor Field. But you, besides doing just that, you were able to do a little bit more. Give our listeners a little bit of idea of what you're able to do besides going flying west to go east.
Well, once I did end up in Regina, I was very fortunate to actually meet up with the voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, Mr. Rod Peterson. We got talking a little bit about the trip out there and just talking about like football in general and everything. And I just happened to ask about if they were doing any tours of the new stadium, because I knew the stadium had been, for the most part, built. And I think it's about 80% completed, if I'm not mistaken. They even actually had a University of Regina actually played a football game there, sort of like a dry run, if you will, for the stadium itself.
Yeah.
Drew's about 16,000 people. So, I mean, like, not everything was open for them, but I mean, they still managed to get people in there, and they were able to actually watch a football game, which was pretty impressive. So
if I remember correctly, no use to the scoreboard and temporary concessions.
That's right. Like, it was bare bones as you can get. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you could still say that, yes, you did go see a football game in that stadium. So I'm pretty sure that was exciting for them. But when I was with Rod, I had asked him, like, do you know for sure if – do you know if they're by any chance doing any tours this day? And he said, no, I don't think they've done anything like that yet. But, you know, maybe one day they'll do something like that. I said, well, that would be pretty awesome. You know, I said, it'd be awesome to see something like that. Well, wouldn't you know, a little while later, he calls me up. He said, you still want to do that tour? I'm like, hell yeah. I'm like, so he actually had a couple of friends throughout the city of Regina who was overseeing the building of the stadium. They were actually doing a tour anyways, and he asked, hey, I got a couple of folks from Montreal that are in for the game and would love to see them in the stadium. Do you mind if they tag along? I'm like, sure, invite them along. So lo and behold, over at the head over to the new stadium, which is just adjacent to it's so weird saying the old Mosaic Stadium. Mm-hmm. The current Mosaic Stadium, let's put it that way.
Taylor Field,
yes. So, yeah, the new stadium is just adjacent to it and easy enough to get to. So we go in and, yeah, sure enough, we're here for the tour. Let's take a tour. And just walking around, like just walking into the stadium itself was eye-opening. It was absolutely beautiful. I mean, like you definitely see a lot of green, which is no surprise in Saskatchewan, but the seats – all regular seats. There's no benches. There's no metal or wooden benches, but it's been modernized completely. Like this is a state, like I will definitely say this is like an NFL caliber style of football stadium. Absolutely beautiful.
Well, you went to Winnipeg earlier this year. How would you rate it to Investors Group?
I'd say very similar, to be honest with you. I think a lot of the design aspects and elements that went into Investors Group Field is going into the new Mosaic Stadium. And like I said, this is definitely going to be the place to watch a football game. It's like I said, I can't begin to describe how awesome it is. And just taking a walk around, like you got wide concourses. The luxury suites are absolutely fantastic. Even the broadcast booths, like for both radio and television, mm-hmm. state of the art. Everything is state of the art. And this is the really awesome part. There's going to be Wi-Fi literally everywhere throughout the stadium. They actually have like Wi-Fi receivers in every section, like in where the the handrails are,
yeah.
Like walking into the stadium, they've got these like giant gray boxes. Those are Wi-Fi receivers, and this is going to be a very well connected stadium. And the most amazing part was too.
Hint, hint, McGill. Hint, hint, Alouettes. Yeah. Hint, hint.
Yeah, just FYI, yeah. It can be done.
No. It that's Wi-Fi, not FYI. Sorry.
Couldn't resist.
I think just lost our listener.
Once again, this show's gone off the rails.
Yeah.
But again, overall, the stadium itself is absolutely tremendous. I'm actually going to be doing a piece on the alternative on it, just on like the whole Regina game day experience and previewing this new stadium as well. Like I was able to take a few photos. And once again, thank you so much to the city of Regina and to Rod Peterson for arranging for this tour. It was absolutely fantastic just being able to go in and see just what's going to be the future for football in Saskatchewan. I'm telling you right now, Rider Nation is going to have – they're going to be jacked. As soon as they walk in for that first game next season, their minds are going to be blown. I think this is going to be definitely – I think the bar has now been set extremely high when it comes to new stadiums. And I know there's quite a few teams that are thinking about getting a new stadium, Calgary being one of them. I would say if they are thinking about wanting to get a new stadium built, they're going to be looking at new Mosaic Stadium, and that's going to be like the standard bearer as far as stadiums go in the Canadian Football League. I mean, it's just – and I can just tell right away it's going to be an absolutely amazing place to watch a football game.
Now, besides that I don't know if you sent out a link or anything. You also, after you got back, after I think you had to deal with fog over in Regina and getting back. And you had to fly with the Alouettes, didn't you? Wait a minute. That's another thing. You actually get to fly with the Owls, didn't you?
Yes, I did, actually. Like as much as I want to give –
They had to go to Calgary too?
Yeah. Well, don't forget, they spent the week in Calgary.
Right. They were in after Calgary, so they were already west.
They were already west. They were already acclimated and everything like that. So that was all well and good. So it was just funny. Like, I'm sitting in the airport in Calgary, and sure enough, Anthony Calvillo walks by. I'm like, what the – is that AC? And it's so funny. Like, it's just a testament to who Anthony Calvillo the man is, the fact that he was extremely early for his flight. I'm like, wait a minute, because I had no idea. I just I knew that the team was going to be going to Regina at some point, but just already? And what would be the odds that it would be on the flight that I would be going to take, or the flight that I would be taking to go to Regina? And sure enough, Jacques Chapdelaine walks by, a couple other coaches walk by, a couple players. I could tell they were players because they had all their Alouettes gear. I think they were practice roster guys. And then slowly but surely, more and more players are coming in. And then I see Nicolas Boulet come in. He's like, hey, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm about to ask you the same question. And sure enough, it's like, yeah, we're going to Regina now. And yeah, like there are quite a few of the other players. Like, so yeah, a good bulk of the players were just walking right through. And next thing you know, it turns out we're all on the same flight to Regina. So yeah, I could definitely say that I got to travel with the Alouettes this season, which is a pretty awesome experience.
That is pretty cool, actually.
I, totally not planned. That was the other thing, too. It's just by sheer happenstance that this flight happened to have myself and the players on, which was, like I said, very cool. I mean, like I said, the players were obviously in good spirits. They pretty much spent the week together. So, I mean, there was a lot of team bonding that was going on. I know they went to a few extracurricular events while they were in Calgary. So, I mean, you know, I could definitely tell that the mood was good. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw a lot of that for the most part on the field this past Saturday. So I'm hoping that, you know, I say this is a little too late to do some team building because the team has been built for quite some time. But I think just the fact that they're all able to spend time together and just sort of, I don't know,
They're able to stay away from a week. They're able to, it's funny, they're able to practice in the snow. They were able to, you know, for all the weird weather that they're getting out west. That was the bonding. Sometimes all it takes is 1 week, make a few changes on the roster, and that's sometimes all that it takes. So it's it sounds fun. I myself have to get to a few more of these stadiums, but you know, I haven't been to anything as far. I've been to Hamilton. I've been to Ottawa. I've been to TO. I've mm-hmm. been to, does Moncton count? Yeah, hell yeah, yep. Moncton counts.
I mean, I count it.
Yeah. So, but that's it. Just the stuff in the east. Just the stuff in the east. I haven't been anything out west. I've been close, but I haven't, you know, haven't been to anything.
But one thing I will say, I mean, Saskatchewan, the city of Regina, they love themselves some football. There's absolutely no question about that. I mean, the game day experience itself, like I said, even with the rain, people were in good spirits. Everybody was having a good time. Like I said, just hanging out with the Piffles Pod crew was absolutely awesome. Just football fans. That's really all it came down to. Like, I mean, like I said, maybe because this isn't quite the heated rivalry as, say, if it was like, I don't know, like Saskatchewan versus Winnipeg or Saskatchewan versus Calgary. Maybe that might make it a little more of a hostile atmosphere. Like, I think Montreal, Saskatchewan, even though they played each other in the Grey Cup twice, I still don't really get that true rivalry sense, like that I hate each, you know, where they hate each other's guts kind of thing. No, I really think it was just good times all around. I mean, a lot of friendly chirping back and forth, and you know, I'm all for that. I'm all for a little jaw jacking. That's all good to me. But I mean, overall, it was definitely a great atmosphere. And like I said, just it's really unfortunate about the rain, but again, you can't control the weather, unfortunately. But people there. The people that were there obviously were there to see a football game and to have a good time. And I like to believe that win or lose, these fans definitely know how to have a good time, right, and definitely enjoy themselves. And I'm just really excited for them and what the future holds. Because, like I said, once they get into that new stadium, it's going to be amazing. I can definitely tell it's going to be an absolutely tremendous atmosphere to watch football.
Yeah. I think the league – was it officially or unofficially sent out lists for the team, for the players that are going to be eligible for, was it the rookie of the year?
Yep. They released the nominees for rookie of the year for each team.
And I'm trying to find the list here because it's not the easiest thing to find on the CFL webpage. Hint, hint, CFL. I mean, you gotta make things easier unless it's on their press site.
Well, I've got the list in front of me if you'd like me to read it off to you.
Sure. Here we go. I found it. I just found it. Okay, so for the Alouettes, and I had a few head scratchers, by the way, on some of these. So Vernon Adams, Shane Carden, Ethan Davis, Philippe Gagnon, Greg Henderson, Jared Koster, Corbin Lukes, Jonathan Mincy, Raymond Taylor, and Dominique
Teremensen.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, because you and I have not talked about this. When you saw these names, who did you choose?
Without question, Jonathan Mincy. The guy has played, all things considered, played outstanding football this season in Montreal. I mean, like I said, he was put in a very tough situation having to play in the secondary, just replacing a Dominique Ellis or a Mitchell White, which nobody would have expected that to happen. But lo and behold, those guys get cut and these new guys get put in, guys like Ethan Davis, Jonathan Mincy, Greg Henderson, and Raymond Taylor. Now, Mincy has played the most. Out of all these players, Mincy's played the most, and he's been extremely solid. He has been a very consistent player week in and week out. Hasn't been perfect. Like I said, nobody in this team has been perfect, especially being a rookie too. That's a lot of pressure to be part of that defensive backfield.
Right.
And for the most part, Mincy has stepped up to the plate and played extremely well. So without question, for the rookie nominee, I would definitely go with Jonathan Mincy.
Yeah, I did too. But without same thing. Without even question, I saw the list and I was like, yeah, him. Has to be him. One of my head scratchers was for Corbin Lukes. I was like, what? No. No. But I agree with you. Now, as of taping this, the league has not announced anything else. But I wanted to ask you before we talked about quickly about the game for next week. Let's go over who we think could get some of the other one, or who will be our other nominees. I think probably one of the hardest ones to do this year, considering how well, will be our MOP. Who could we choose? And to be in all fairness, I think our MOP has to come from our defense.
You could make that argument, but listen, I've been saying this all year. I would definitely say for most outstanding player, it has to be Nick Lewis.
Okay.
I mean, the guy's been a leader all year long. He's been fighting with every single game. He brings it, and win or lose, he still has the same positive attitude. I mean, I still remember him frustrated after that. I think it was the 31-7 loss where he just went off on that profanity-filled tangent. But at the same time, like, that's the sign of a guy that wants to win. That's a guy that's passionate and hates to lose. I mean, that's the kind of guy, as far as I'm concerned, like, when you talk about the most outstanding player, like, that is the kind of guy you want on your team. And the way he plays and leads by example, I mean, that's, to me, I mean, yeah, this defense is the cornerstone of the franchise. There's absolutely no question about that. And there's a lot of absolutely outstanding players. But there's already you already have a best defensive player award they're going to need nominations for. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you talk about most outstanding player, yeah, it's easy to say someone on defense. But, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's Nick Lewis all day long. I'd be quite frankly stunned if somebody else were to get that nomination.
Now, I know you're talking about defense too, and talking about our MOP. And to be fair, considering what he's doing this year and how close he's leading the, I think I haven't checked the league stats, but I think he's now leading the league in tackles. Bear Woods, I think Bear Woods should be ours, in my opinion. Even though I think he could also be could easily be eligible for our defensive player of the year.
And that would be my nomination, like, for most outstanding defensive player. That would be my nomination right there, would be Bear Woods. Because just for the exact same reasons what you had just listed. And just like I said, he still has that killer mindset. He still brings it every game as well. I mean, like I said, it's not easy to be on a losing team. It's not easy to get up for playing for a losing team. And the guys on defense, by and large, have been able to do so. And a guy like Bear Woods, who, like you said, is racking up tackles like you wouldn't believe. I mean, the guy's an outstanding player and just an outstanding person off the field as well. I know that doesn't get taken into consideration, but I just felt like I had to mention that. I mean, Bear Woods, without question. I mean, he's been healthy too all year too, for the first time in quite some time. So, I mean, that's another added bonus as well, is the fact that in addition to playing the way he has, the fact that he's managed to stay healthy all year is nothing short of remarkable.
Best Canadian.
See, that one I would find a little tricky. Statistically, I guess you'd go with Sam Giguère, because he's scored touchdowns. He's done pretty much everything that you've wanted him to do, by and large. Hasn't been the most outstanding player, but, I mean, he is Canadian.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? With his stats, to be fair, I don't think he should be it. He's been largely ignored this year, in my opinion. I do not think that he is I don't think he should be. I don't think he should be. It's tough. Just looking at the list of all the of all the Nationals here. I know some of the guys on the other podcasts won't, you know, they hate that term, the National and the Internationals. Import, non-import. It's tough. I mean, you know, a Nicolas Boulay, a Marc-Olivier Brouillé, I don't know.
I mean, they're both of those guys are outstanding.
Christian Matt, considering what he had to do this year, taking over the center position, you also have a Jacob Ruby who's been playing mostly, you know, somewhat fair this year, but he's just, as of late, he keeps getting burned.
Yeah.
Maybe a Christian Matt. I think maybe a, to be fair of everybody, maybe a Christian.
Well, and again, that'd be a great choice as well. In fact, Christian Matt would actually be my choice for most outstanding lineman, which is also a nominated category.
For the O-lineman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, for the exact same reasons that you just listed off would be why I would choose Christian Matt for most outstanding lineman, because, yeah, he was definitely put in a very tough situation. He wasn't expected to be center, actually. It was actually supposed to be – Dominique Picard was supposed to be the center Luc Brodeur-Jourdain was recovered from his knee injury. And then Picard ups and retires during training camp. So Christian Matt was essentially next man up. So – in addition to playing tackle and guard like he has for the past couple of years in Montreal, now he's being tasked with a very important job of playing center. And yeah, like you said, he was put in a tough situation because, I mean, trying to replace a LBJ is no small feat. And for the most part, he did very well to the point where he's played so well at the center position is that even though Luc Brodeur-Jourdain is actually back playing, he's just subbing in and out with Matt more often than not. Like, LBJ is now the backup, whereas Christian Matt is the starting center, and it's very possible that he could end up staying as the starting center, because LBJ is a hell of a player, but I mean, he's had that significant knee injury last year. He's back, but still not quite 100%,
and
he's also on the wrong side of 30, so I mean, you add all these factors up, and you have to wonder, like, when you start looking towards the future, it's very possible that Christian Matt could end up being the starting center for the foreseeable future in Montreal.
I wouldn't be surprised. The way that we're both talking, I would not be surprised if we had some double nominees, in my opinion.
Oh absolutely.
I think the only one where we won't have a double nominee will be for special teams.
Yeah.
I think it's rather obvious that Stefan Logan will be named as our nominee.
No question. And again, the ageless wonder, like both he and Kyrie Saber, like these are guys that are in their mid-30s and they're still playing like they're like fresh out of college practically. Like it's absolutely outstanding. And yeah, like major, major credit to Stefan Logan. I mean, he still hasn't quite broken out the way we'd like him to this year, but I mean, he gets those runs and he can get up to midfield no problem as long as you can clear a lane for the guy. And I think that's one of the things that special teams still by and large needs to work on is just trying to get out of his way. Like, try to clear that lane so that he can maybe take one to the house would be fantastic, but it hasn't happened yet this year. And oh, there's still time. There's still two more games to go, so it could very well happen. But yeah, definitely Stefan Logan, without question, has to be the clear choice for most outstanding special teams player.
Right. And some of the other ones we can't really do because it's, you know, commissioner's award and et cetera, et cetera. And we'll have to see who the nominees are and then who gets actually chosen. And then they, you know, as everybody knows, they dwindle them down and so on and so on. Good choices though. I like your choices. We're almost on the same page, with everything.
I definitely agree that, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple double nominees as well. Like I said, when it comes to outstanding Canadian, like very few have really stood out, but like I said, if I were to go strictly by stats and production, like I said, I would go with Giguère, but I can definitely see you making a case for Christian Matt as well, and I could get behind that nomination 100% as well. So yeah, a couple of double nominees would not surprise me in the least.
Yeah. Before we talk about quickly about the game this week and we sign off this week, we at least want to mention something that something that everybody within the CFL podcast family, and not only the CFL podcast family but also the CFL family, has come to learn and are trying to get behind. Former Alouettes player Baron Miles and his wife are going through some rough times. His wife is actually she's been enduring an abdominal condition that has left the family and medical professionals searching for answers. There seems to be a something that they could do, but it's at a high cost. and it's at $30,000 US in order to get this, you know, this procedure done and try to find out what's happening with her, and obviously trying to get her back to normal. A GoFundMe page has been set up, and so far they are at 20%, or was it not 20? My math is way off. They're 2/3 of the way there to their goal of $30,000. As of taping, they're at 20,000 to 280 of reaching their goal, Cliff. So if you even just have a little bit, because I know there are some huge names that are on this list as donors, all from all across the CFL. But you can head over to GoFundMe.com/CFL family and give what you can. Even if it's just, you know, doesn't have to be much, but just for this cause. I'm sure anything will help when it comes to this type of thing. So obviously our thoughts and good wishes are heading out to the Baron Miles family, right?
Absolutely. I mean, not just the fact that he's a former Alouette, just the fact that he is a member of this Canadian Football League family of ours. I mean, yeah. I mean, folks, if you have a chance, I mean, like I said, every little bit helps. I mean, like I said, they're 2/3 of the way there, which is absolutely fantastic. And major credit to everybody who stepped up and helped donate to this cause. But yeah, I mean, let's see what we can do. I mean, we all did a great job in helping Darren Diedrich earlier this year with his GoFundMe for him going through cancer treatments, actually. And he had to go down to the States for a very similar situation. I don't know. It's not necessarily cancer, I don't believe, for Baron Miles' wife.
They've never mentioned that actual name. Everything that I've read always talks about it's an abdominal condition. It could be anything. It could be anything. The human body is just so complex.
Oh, yeah. It really is. And like I said, if we can all just, you know, find some – any way we can to help this family out to – you know, help find out what's going on, you know, try to find, I don't know, necessarily a cure, or at least, you know, try to figure out what's happening inside that human body and try to get that figured out. I mean, I think we all, as members of this family, we all definitely have to help each other out when we can. So if you, even just a couple of bucks to spare, you know, head over to the GoFundMe page. I think we'll throw it up on the Alouette's Flight Deck Twitter.
Yes.
Go check it out. Yeah. And yeah, just if you can, folks, you know, find it. Any way you can help to donate, by all means, please do so.
Last home game of the year, the Alouettes are calling for everybody to come dressed as football fans and for Halloween.
and not dressed like chairs.
Come dressed as chairs. I know they're giving – see, this is funny. You and I have talked about this earlier. They're giving away 500 T-shirts. Why only 500 T-shirts? I don't get that. I don't get that. You know, it's maybe the first year anyways, positivity, Capper, positivity.
Hey, at least it's not another whiteout.
No. Yeah. Cause we're 0 for on that. We don't need another whiteout. By the way, actually speaking of, they wore their silver helmets on the road this week.
Yes, they did.
For the first time all season.
Yeah, actually, wearing the road uniforms with the silver helmet. Yeah, that's their, and it worked. Yeah, they won.
So but we got Calgary. We got Calgary in this week. The defense did an absolutely amazing job versus the last time that they played them a couple weeks ago. But unfortunately, the defense can't do everything.
No, unfortunately not.
Now, one thing that I guess the Alouettes have going for them is that this is Calgary's last game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
They have at least they'll have besides this they'll have another 2 weeks off, two or three.
It'll be three because they're on the bye next week,
right?
And then there's
So
yeah, like after this coming Sunday, they won't play until the Western Final, which is in late November.
So depends on how much Bo Levi plays, et cetera, and all the others play. With what Vernon Adams Jr. did last week, is he able to? Because so far the weather looks like it's supposed to be sunny and maybe I think 8 degrees at kickoff for the Alouettes on Sunday. Is it something that can be done again? Do the Owls obviously on Pick'em? Nobody's giving them a chance. I think last time I checked, I think, and we're only Tuesday. The Owls had, I think, it was a 7% chance at winning, or 7% of people had chosen Montreal.
Yeah.
What do the Owls have a chance to win this one and close out this wreck of a of a home season for 2016?
Well, in a perfect scenario, it'd be great if Calgary decided not to risk their starters getting hurt and just, you know, maybe treating this like a preseason game, whereas the starters only get a couple of series and then let the let substitutes come in and play. And if that were the case, then yeah, Montreal would definitely have a fighting chance. But I mean, Calgary has got history on their side. They wanna make history with their record, because if they were to win, they'd be 16-1-1, which has never been done in the Canadian Football League. I mean, that's an absolutely outstanding mark. And also, too, the fact, like I said earlier, they're not going to play a game again until the Western Finals. So, I mean, you want to have your top stars ice cold going into this game in late November. But it's so tough because, I mean, if I'm Calgary, there's a big part of me that kind of wants to not have guys like Bo Levi Mitchell and Jerome Messam playing. But at the same time, you don't want them getting cold either. So what do you do? So
I know.
Whether or not Montreal has a chance is – I mean, they always have a chance. Don't get me wrong. But I guess it really comes down to just how badly does Calgary want this 16th win? And I think that's going to be a huge factor.
Considering how dominant Calgary has been and where Montreal is – because you know, the defense really has been this team this year. They're only an underdog by 10 points in most of the online bookmakers, which I'm very surprised. I thought it'd be a little bit higher, but it's only a 10-point difference right now.
And also, let's not forget the fact, too, that when Calgary comes into Percival Molson Stadium, they usually have a hard time playing here. There's been a couple times where they've just been beaten. In fact, you remember last season, Rakeem Cato's professional debut, he got the win against Calgary. And it wasn't half of Calgary's team or all their backups or anything like that. No, he actually played against their starters, against Bo Levi Mitchell, and won. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess, like I said, there's so much to consider here. I mean, Montreal, for whatever reason, seems to do really well against this Calgary team at Percival Molson Stadium. Going out to Calgary is a whole different story. But here in Montreal, if they don't outright win the game, they're at least very competitive. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to think of the last time that Calgary has blown out Montreal at home.
They're 22-14 at home versus Calgary. Trying to see what it was here. Do I have my scores here? That sure would help, Cap, if you had the scores. They've done quite well. Their last two games versus Calgary has been a 31-15 win and a 29-11 win.
Mm-hmm.
But getting blown out at home, they've lost by 40 to Calgary. But that was back in 1996.
Okay, well, see, that's not so bad. So, like I said, I never said they were perfect, but I mean, more often than not, when Calgary plays in Montreal, Montreal usually ends up the victor. So, yeah, there definitely is a chance. I mean, despite everything that's gone on this year for both Calgary and for Montreal, yeah, Montreal does have a chance. And again, now there's some game film on Vernon Adams, but not very much. Not enough to formulate a complete strategy against the guy. So, I mean, if Jacques Chaplin just comes in with this game with Adams and just completely switches everything up again and runs a few new plays, and just if the O-line can just find a way to at least let Adams escape, get out of the pocket and move the ball a little bit, I mean, anything can happen. That's the beautiful thing about football, is that anything can happen.
Exactly. To me, they'd have to play the perfect game. They will have to play the perfect game, which they almost did. You know, the 22-8. Is that what was the final score?
In Saskatchewan, it was 19-14.
No. Versus Calgary last time, it was 22-8. The score is very misleading. You know, obviously the 8 points were at the end of the game. Or 22-9?
No, it was 22-8.
22-8
in Calgary. Yeah.
So the defense that we know is going to be there, they're going to hopefully go out on a winning note. It should be very interesting to see how Vernon Adams does against the defense of Calgary and how well they play. You know, if they're going to be looking ahead to the bye weeks or not, but it'd be very interesting to see. So if you don't have your tickets, come on out. It's the last time you're gonna be able to see your Owls this year until 2017. Is it June?
Yep.
Is it June yet?
Yeah. Is it June 2017 yet?
Is it June yet? So, before we go, just remind you, we are on social media. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. Twitter is Alouettes FL Deck. Facebook also is Alouettes Flight Deck. Do not forget, if you've missed any of our shows this year, there are multiple ways that you can listen to them on iTunes, Podbean, and over at Google Play Music. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up. Give us the likes if you like the show, because we want to make sure that you like what we do. So.
Yeah, and also, Tim, really quick, I want to mention the CFL Twitter Awards are also going on, and I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's nominated us for favorite podcast. It's really awesome to see these votes, and please, by all means, I mean, if you really like us and you want us to win, I mean, like I said, as far as I'm concerned, I'm of the opinion that, yeah, all these podcasts are great and everybody deserves love. So, yeah. I mean, any votes that you want to send our way, definitely appreciate it. I mean, it's like I said, as far as the CFL podcast family goes, like I said, everyone here does a fantastic job. There's simply no question about that. Everybody brings something to the table, and it's all fantastic stuff.
The only thing that we should win this year is what did I put it as? It was the –
Was it favorite podcast sound effect or –
I'm trying to see what I actually put it as.
That made me laugh. I really enjoyed that, because like
the category for best sound used to censor podcast cursing. There's only three of us, as far as I know. There's only three of us. There's us. There's the Tune Out. You know, us and the Lunatic. The Tune Out CFL podcast. There's the Angry Elk, and over the guys are over the Empire Pod. It's the Fire Trucker.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, again, it's all done in fun. It's nice to win these type of things. But even just being nominated was nice enough to see. So we appreciate it, and obviously we appreciate everybody who listens to this show. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.